Let's go.
Welcome back to Bingetown TV. This is a very special episode as we are finally, the wheel has turned enough for us to be covering Amazon's Wheel of Time, which, if you haven't heard over the past 6+ months, is based on the famous fantasy series by Robert Jordan. I have waited an unbelievable amount of time for this. I guess a little background. So I'm Kyle. I'll probably end up being the host for a lot of these Wheel of Time episodes. So I've read the main series completely, so I'll kind of be the host. Luke has also been diving into the books a little bit. So Luke, why don't you give them a little background of where you're at?
Yeah, so we're recording this on October 14th, and it's about, a month before the Wheel of Time show drops. And about, 3 months ago, I started audiobooking the Wheel of Time series. So right now I'm about halfway to 3/4 of the way through the second book. And from our knowledge and the little hints that the showrunners have given us, season one is going to cover all of book one and then parts of book two. So I think from a book standpoint, I have all the knowledge that season one is going to give us, but absolutely loving the series. I'm going to be finished by the time season two comes out.
Damn.
Oh, there you go. You're saying
season three, you're going to give us a little cushion. it's definitely a big meal.
So in the last couple days, I jumped on the audiobook bandwagon, and I'm only about 6 chapters in, part of episode one, so I kind of can see what's going on with episode one. Don't have the knowledge that Kyle and Luke have, but I'm already enjoying what I'm hearing, I guess, technically, with the audiobooks.
Hello, Bingetown. My name is Dave, and I have zero knowledge of the books at all. I don't know if I'll ever get into the books. We'll see how the series goes. I'm not much of a big reader, so we'll see how that beast goes. But yeah, these episodes were really good, and I'm definitely super excited to get into the meat of the seasons as they go on, just because Kyle and Luke have been hyping this up for a very long time.
The last thing I want to say is, before I'll pass it off, we are going to be doing a full deep dive of the episodes on the podcast, but this is just going to serve as an instant reaction. We're not going to get too deep into the details. We didn't even have enough time to take notes. So this is going to be your gut reaction and just surface level conversations and just build a little hype.
Yeah. And going back to Dave, we like to have on this podcast some subject matter experts, some people who might have a little knowledge, and some people who don't have any knowledge at all, because we are, when it comes down to it, a TV/movie podcast, and we are talking about the show, even though we will talk about the books. So we want to see what it's like for someone who doesn't know anything. So that's why Dave is perfect for this right now.
These SMEs are going to have to really carry me through these episodes here.
And I guess another thing to note is that the name pronunciations, all fans of the series know that the names can get a little crazy at times. There is a glossary at the end of every book that does spell out all the pronunciations. But if you would be so kind to give us a little grace on these pronunciations, especially our newbies, as we start to dive into this show.
Let me just start by saying to all of our listeners, and Kyle, you can attest to this, we have a group chat for our Bingetown TV hosts. And when Kyle turned on the pre-screeners and saw episode one, he said, "I cannot stop smiling right now. I cannot believe this is happening." So good reviews.
If I'm honest, we saw the entire kind of main cast that we get: Rand, Matt, Perrin, Egwene, and Nynaeve, and then Moraine and Lan. So obviously I just threw a bunch of names out, but seeing them on screen all interacting, I am not lying, I teared up a little bit in my bed. It was just kind of reading the books. It's such a long journey, and these characters will change so much. When we were talking about the show in the final season, in a decade, we're going to look back on these episodes and just be blown away by what they all looked like and were like then, compared to what we're now experiencing at the end of this season, or I'm sorry, the end of this series. So for me, knowing the journey they're all about to go on, it just like is very emotional.
You're going to bring a tear to my eye, because now I'm thinking like 10 years from now, Bingetown's going to be fucking a million listeners deep. We're going to be on top of the world at that point in time. So shout out to everyone that's here right now.
So what I learned probably I got super into the fantasy genre over the last year and a half. And one thing I learned is that there's a subgenre of fantasy, and it's called progressive fantasy. And Wheel of Time is like the face of progressive fantasy. This is picture perfect of what progressive fantasy is. It's where you're starting off as a random little peasant farm boy, and then we're going to make our way all the way to the point where you just get exponentially stronger and stronger and stronger. It's character development taken to the fullest extent. And when you're dropping magic into a character development terminology like that, it can leap levels, right? You're going to be like, I don't know anything about the end. I don't have any spoilers past where I am, but I'm assuming we're going to become, like, you saw how Moraine used the magic. We're going to become gods by the end. I feel like they're all unbelievable. The CGI for this show just blew me away. Like, just seeing them use the fucking magic system, I was so happy with it, because that's going to put the bar for this show high enough where you could show it to anybody, and at least the bare minimum they'll be able to say is that there was good production value of this show, and Amazon is not going to let that go. They're just going to keep the budget's going to keep getting better and better as the story gets deeper. And I'm just super excited, as you're saying, to see where these characters become when we look back on season one.
I was so blown away by how good the Trollocs look. So we know that at the end of episode one, it's referred to as Winter Night, everyone is having a good time and dancing. And honestly, the square dancing was funny because it reminded me of seventh grade middle school with sweaty palms.
Oh, yeah.
Square dancing.
Wallies.
Yeah. And then we have a Trolloc attack and everything goes to shit immediately. Everything is now on fire. There are Trollocs just coming with wicked axes and weapons, pretty much killing, devouring all of the residents of Emmonsfield. And I'm just curious to Jimmy and Dave, because you guys had no knowledge that this was coming at the time you saw the episodes. What was that tone switch like in episode one for you?
Yeah, that was 0 to 100, man. It was crazy. And we already said it, the CGI, phenomenal. These things are terrifying looking. They look as real as they can look, all the way to that, down to the slobber coming down from their teeth. It is just unbelievable. But I didn't know like how deep we're going to get into like fantastical beasts and things like that. So when the attacks came, obviously we see the hooded figure and you know he's not really human, or you're guessing he's not really human. He's the first one you see that's like that. But I wasn't expecting a full army of these beasts to come and attack. So that was very shocking to me. And I was like, let's go.
I'll be honest. So it was an hour episode. I'd say like the first 45 minutes for me, I wasn't really that hooked, just because, you know, we're introduced to all these characters, these traditions, this culture that we don't really even still have like background to. So, you know, it's just a lot of introduction. So it kind of started off slow, which it obviously has to. But by the end of episode one, I was 100%. I was like, yes, I'm in.
That's what I honestly had a little bit. So I watched it with Dave in person and then another one of our roommates who, again, also had zero knowledge of Wheel of Time. And I had a little bit of anxiety watching it with you guys because I knew that this is going to be like season one of Game of Thrones. There's so many seeds that need to get planted.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know how many people watched Game of Thrones, including me, when season one came out, and I just did not really continue? It was like before the curve and before season three when it pops off and becomes global.
Yep.
This show is not going to take it that slow, but I noticed, at least in the first three episodes, the first half hour at least, is a little bit slower, and it's by design. We need to build these relationships between the Emmonsfield Five, and we need to kind of do all the world building lifting that you need to do. Like, season one's always going to be like that for an epic fantasy, but for them to just crush it at the end of episode one and just show the threat level that we're dealing with, and not only from the bad guys, but from the good guys at what we can combat with. Cause dude, you guys had no idea how strong Moraine was going to be, the Aes Sedai or the witch, which we might refer to her as for this episode at least. But that was just such a good level set of who this Dark One and what he's bringing to the table is going to be like.
And maybe it felt a little slower just because, you know, at least from what you guys were telling me, you know, there's going to be magic. You know, there's going to be some twist in that regard. But these characters start off as literal peasants. Like, you don't, excluding the first scene, which is when the Aes Sedai kill that guy. Besides that, it's just all farm work. It's like you don't really see any magic, anything. So it is it feels a lot longer than it actually is.
The first book of Wheel of Time is called Eye of the World, which is, like Luke had mentioned earlier, a lot of the season will be based off of. And it is kind of made in the Tolkien mold, because in the 90s, it was kind of an easy marketing tactic to start writing books because everyone was kind of looking a little bit for the next Lord of the Rings. It was an easy style and structure for fans to kind of latch onto. So a lot of the first book in the early Wheel of Time is following that magical person, Gandalf, Moraine, come to the village, mm-hmm. find a peasant who has never been outside of their village in their entire right. lives.
And explain eventually that they're like a chosen one.
Yeah, they have this destiny they need to fulfill. They have some mission that they didn't know was a thing until today. And now they have to go as far as they've ever been from their home in their entire lives. And they have all of this responsibility thrusted on them with unbelievable danger on their heels that basically they thought was just myth and nightmare, which has now come alive to them.
It's just so crazy when you're presented that opportunity, when you've just lived this simple life for so long, and then all of a sudden one person shows up who you know isn't really that trustworthy because it seemed like people are against the Aes Sedai, or at least they have a negative reputation. And then for them to tell you all this stuff and that you have to follow this person that you don't fully trust, it's like, how do you go through with that? And I love that conflict that they brought in episode two with, I think it was Rand, who was like, I'm not following you. Like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah. And Kyle, let me ask you this question as someone who's just starting to read the books. You can tell in the books that she comes in more as a stranger, but they think she's like a lady and they're kind of looking up to her and saying like, oh my gosh, what is she doing here? She's like from a fairy tale. But when episode one happens and she walks in the room, everyone's like, oh,
that change is by design because of moving to the medium of television. So it's funny that we talked about how most, maybe like 3/4 of episode one is a little slow because they have to establish everything. Well, the books themselves are slower than that.
Right.
In the sense that Moraine and Lan, like that whole scene that the epic scene we see at the end of episode one, where she's throwing bricks and she's twisting all of these Trollocs up and the lightning, that is all off-screened in the books. We get the aftermath of it.
Right.
And she comes in somewhat under an alias. It's not as brazen as her and Lan kicking down the door, basically, at the Winespring right. Inn and being like, hey, here's my Aes Sedai ring. Like, get me a stable and a bed. But for the show, it does make a little sense for them to kind of skirt all that thing along because we need to get moving a little bit. There's only 8 episodes in the season itself. So that's kind of something that people like me, book watchers, will kind of have to try to give them the benefit of the doubt for these types of changes. And I think in my mind, speaking specifically on this thing, worked out perfectly for me. I thought it was fine. And then a lot of other changes they made too, I thought were perfectly fine.
Another big change, and Jimmy, you'll start picking up on this because this goes right off the back of what Kyle was just saying. A lot of things aren't necessarily off-screened in the books, but Robert Jordan, the writer of the series, doesn't explicitly do a lot of the darker stuff. But because of how things happen and how characters react, it's just assumed that this dark, very, very dark stuff is happening. And that's right. why it's amazing to see this change. And people were worried, is it going to look too dark compared to the book, but be unfaithful along those lines? But I think it's great because when I'm reading the books, I'm assuming the worst. Like, I'm assuming right. grim, dark.
I'll tell you right now, there's one character I most certainly would not want to be, and that is Perrin.
Yes.
That was, yeah, okay, my gosh.
While we're on the subject of dark and harshness, might as well, there will be, if you haven't seen the first episode.
Well, you should stop listening to the podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. We'll put that out there, but at that moment specifically is actually what sold the show to me because, yeah, we've seen like magic battles like that to that caliber in certain shows, but it's those individual deaths and twists that make a series. Mm-hmm. And when Perrin fucking looks up and him and his girlfriend or wife are fucking those Trollocs up and then he's still on guard, because it's so realistic. Like, you would be on edge, and if you hear something behind you, you're swinging that fucking axe, and lo and behold, it was his fucking wife. And I was sitting there like, no fucking way.
I like yelled out loud
when
that happened. I did not see that coming at all.
So that's another thing from the books, though, because, you know, I'm just analyzing this from the perspective of coming fresh off book one, and I see this girl, Perrin's like hugging up on her, and I'm like, that, who the fuck is this girl? Because she's not in the books, and they just used it to add on to the tragedy of shaping Perrin and like the kind of character he is. Because at the end of episode one, he's just like a zombie on the horse.
Oh, yeah.
Chasing my two roommates, Chase and Dave, were just like saying like, holy shit, look at that dude. They said they would have rather been any other person except for him.
Mm-hmm.
It totally makes sense.
A big part of Perrin's character early in the books in the series is that he is such a big guy. He always grew up bigger than everyone else. He's always described as this like big burly man. He is a blacksmith's apprentice. Like, he is basically jacked as fuck.
Yeah.
But he's also quiet because it's part of his personality that he doesn't want to scare people. He doesn't want to like make sudden moves or do a bunch of stuff because he knows that he can hurt people really easily. So he doesn't really speak loudly. He likes to think things through and stuff. And I think it was easier for them in a way to show that level of tragedy, what he's capable of, that blatantly on screen, so that now we have him in episodes 2 and 3 where he's very quiet. He looks haunted by these things. You can tell he's really shaken up about it, but he's also becomes very protective of Egwene at the beginning. I believe it says episode 3 or maybe the end of episode 2 when they're trying to start the fire really quickly. And he's like, yep. I got it. He's trying to protect her so much. And that's just like the essence of his character. And I really think that instead of having the internal monologue or people just endless exposition of people reminding us that he is like that, that quick scene, which unfortunately is the end of his wife, really lays that out for us. And I thought that was well done, honestly.
And this goes perfect into what we were talking about with standards of like at least the magic when Moraine's using the magic. It just sets the standards like no one is safe, really, which is what we loved personally. What I loved most about Game of Thrones, those kinds of shows, is like if you set that standard of no one is safe, I'm in. Just keep me on the edge of my seat. Let me know that everyone's life is always at risk, no matter who it is. There's no MC armor, you know.
So as much as I love Perrin, Perrin is actually my favorite character from the entire series. So that's a little bit of a spoiler alert, I guess. He's just a beast. That's my boy. I love him to death. But we can move on to someone we haven't really mentioned a lot for this instant reaction, and that's Matt.
Yes.
So Matt is somewhat consensus the favorite character of the entire series for people.
I can see it already.
He's already kind of like, I know he's a thief and he just takes things, but like I can already tell that personality, and he's just going to have such a big transition, I feel like, that I am already on board with Matt, even though he's a piece of shit right now.
Yeah, he has that little roguish grin to him. He's a little gambler in the tavern. He wants to keep drinking and flirting up the chicks. It's just like very crowd-pleasing.
Yeah, but he's got that softness to him where he wants to take care of his sisters. And it like eats him up inside that he had to leave them.
Kyle, actually, when we talk about Wheel of Time holistically and the book series as a whole, and he's not going to ever give me spoilers or anything like that, but he does always mention that he thinks Matt's going to become my favorite character. And I think Matt is the worst of them so far where I am. But also, that's also what he tells me, that it's kind of consensus that he has a little rough start in the series. The books, that is. But the show... You have to keep this in mind, and I'm absolutely sorry if you haven't heard this and you're listening to this podcast, but the actor who plays Matt actually had some off-screen issues. I don't think it's been publicized yet, but he's already been recast. And theories, they're flying around, but whatever it is, just don't get super attached to his face.
And it sucks because I liked him
so
far. I know.
I'm watching the whole time. I'm like, I don't love this guy. I'm convincing myself.
I know.
But the actor, he did a good job.
And he did really well.
His story is cool. And Kyle, remind me if this is true or not, but are the sisters made up?
No, the sisters are real.
I just don't really remember all that like happening. I guess they added more to make it more dramatic.
So the only thing they changed, like the relationship between his parents. I think it just gives him a little more tragedy, which it does, because he kind of becomes the man of the house.
And,
yeah, like the sole protector of his sisters. I think that, like you said, Jimmy, I think that adds a nice dimension to his character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I was so attached to Matt early on, is because even though we saw him be a scumbag, at the end of the day, he saved his sisters. Like, his parents were like, we don't know where they are. It's like, great parents, you fucking are.
And then we get to in episode 3, where it's just Matt and Rand after they've all been split up, after they go to a Shatter Logoth. And
the city for you guys, the big city with the shadows at the end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, the whole time when they're there, is I'm going to get back to home. I got to get back to my sisters, to the girls. While Rand assumes the perspective of, we got to go. We got to go to Tar Valon. We got to go meet up with Egwene, which was an interesting switch where earlier in their journey, when they first leave, kind of Rand wants to be the one to turn back almost and go away. And then shit hits the fan one time and Matt is like, that, we got to go back home. Like, I got to go see the girls. So I thought that was interesting.
And I want to clarify one other thing, because something I noticed pretty explicitly in the show is they constantly refer to the city of Tar Valon as the White Tower.
Yeah.
Which is just like and I don't even really know, that is the White Tower just where all the witches, the Aes Sedai train, right? Like, that's like the home base within the city.
Mm-hmm.
They constantly say White Tower in the show. So whenever we say Tar Valon, because they use that way more liberally in the book, it's the same thing. Like, the whole journey that when they leave the Emmons Field, the village that they start in, is to go there and bring who they think this prophecy is about to the witches and keep them safe and mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So the White Tower is probably what most people who haven't read the books is going to recognize that as.
Most sounds like as a Witcher fan, it's like Kyre Morhen for the Witchers, kind of.
Exactly.
Just, it's the
like
home
that.
Base.
Yeah. Kyre Morhen would be the White Tower, and then the city is just like a okay. huge base around it.
Got it.
Like enormous, like Game of Thrones level big.
Elantris.
Yeah. Or Elantris.
Yeah.
Shout out Brandon Sanderson.
All right. So Kyle / Luke, but you can't answer this question for me, but I just need to know, man. Like, is Roose Bolton going to come back and do some more to the story? I mean, you can't answer it, but Roose Bolton's the man, and we got a little action from Tam. I was impressed with our first three episodes with him, but it seems like they left him behind.
I don't think this is too much of a spoiler to answer that question. Tam does have more influence on the story as we go on. I don't think it's crazy to even say that now. I mean, he is the father of one of the main characters.
Right.
All of their parents impact the story at some point. There's one thing about Wheel of Time is that every time you meet a character and you get their name, there's a chance that they're going to come back into the story and play some type of role, no matter how big or small they are. Mm-hmm. People just kind of constantly, in the terminology of the series, get woven back into it. So everyone kind of has their own little small part to play. And a lot of these characters that we've met in these first three episodes are going to consistently make an impact throughout the whole story.
And let's jump right off of that into Rand. Tell me what you guys thought about him as a character.
To be honest, I was just thinking about this. I love all the characters, to be honest, which is, I feel like, rare for me particularly, because that really dictates how a show is going to be. I know that's not totally accurate, but I was looking at my list of characters right here, and I'm just like, there's not a single person on here that I'm like, fuck that person. Like, I hate them. You know, everyone was great. I think, to me, it seems like Rand is almost the MC so far. Like, he's almost the guy within the five of them traveling. But I think overall he was a great character. I think he's going to have, he just has a lot to go. Like, there's a long way to go.
He is also kind of the loudest, not proponent, because that's actually the opposite word that I'm looking for, but he's the one that rails against Moraine the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's definitely the most vocal out of all the characters that we don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, why are we just trusting these people immediately?
Yeah.
So that's why it kind of gives him a lot of focus, I think, in the beginning, because he is one of the loudest dissenting voice of everyone.
He was me. I mean, and like I said earlier, if I'm forced to trust this woman, like, you know, I would be that person that's like, I'm not going with you. Like, why do I have to trust you? And he was that for me.
Yes. Okay. So one thing I wanted to make sure that I said was, where I've gotten in the book, like what I've read since I've watched these the three episodes, like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, whenever we got the pre-screeners, like where I got into the book, I appreciate how those interactions with Rand and Moraine went so much more because of stuff that happens in the future. And like mm-hmm. the writers knew this when they were writing the show. And I was like, damn, I was a little weirded out by it when it happened in the episode, but it makes so much more sense where the story is going to go. And I think that was great. And I don't know, it's going to be a huge swirl, but Rand acting that way and you guys picking up on that, it makes me happy that they're doing the job that I didn't think they wanted to do, but they actually definitely did. And it was good.
And Kyle, we might want to wait and talk about this during the deep dive, because I do see a similar situation where there's a little bit of a difference between the book and the show, and it might just be like turbo drive just getting us where we need to be. But I did really enjoy how the show pretty much right from the start cemented Egwene and Rand as an actual couple, and it shows on screen the pain that they're feeling, the joy for a second, the loathing, like the selfishness. It's jumping all over the place throughout the three episodes. And it's what you would feel as a lover, or, you know, as someone who loves the other person. And, you know, I thought there was a first watching the episode, I was like, okay, there, I hope, and I don't think it's going to happen, but there's like a chance that Rand could just be like the vanilla main character who's just going to be like the chosen one. And because I don't know anything better, but I thought they did a really good job in these first three episodes, giving him his own personality and character, just cementing him with Egwene.
Rand and Egwene have a very complicated relationship in the series. And I agree with you. They did a really good job of bringing out all of that emotion in these mm-hmm. first three episodes, because I mean, episode one, they bang in the episode.
Right, right.
And then episode two-ish, they start to kind of drift apart. And then we get to three and they're literally physically apart. And you see how the impact it has on Rand, especially. So I agree. I think they did a really good job of that. It's definitely really more romantic in the show.
Yeah.
Than it ever is in the books. But a part of that is also that they age the characters up in the
show. That's what I was going to ask.
Older. Yeah, they're in the books, they're a little younger. I think Egwene might even be like 15 or 16.
So this is like Rand's a Game of Thrones 17. Thing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, nice that they're older. We can get into a little bit more romantic stuff like that. We can get into kind of those more adult-ish themes, which I think will be a good benefit to the show, to attracting a lot better, or not even better, but just a more general audience as well.
Yeah, I mean, like Game of Thrones, they're acting like Daenerys is an adult, but in the book she was like 13 in season one, technically, or something like that.
And the show is much better for it.
Right, exactly.
So speaking, I guess, of Egwene, we haven't talked about her much. There's much more to her character than just being Rand's side piece.
Oh, yeah.
She is clearly very strong-willed. We even see her in episode two. She starts to not develop the gift, but Moraine tells her that, hey, you can channel the way that I channel. You can use the one power. I can teach you how to be an Aes Sedai like me. And I'm curious of what you two thought of that from the get-go of we've seen Moraine kick fucking ass episode one.
Oh yeah.
And then we see kind of Egwene's reaction to the whole Trolloc attack where she's running around with Nynaeve. She's completely shell-shocked. She's crying. She's freaking out almost. And then episode two, almost right after that, the next day, we learn that Egwene could eventually become like Moraine was that night. So what do you think about that?
I think the one thing that I will say, starting with episode one, was I was a little bit confused when it came to the braid thing. Like, I was actually thinking when I was watching that she was becoming an Aes Sedai. Like, not that I knew that word, but I was assuming that that braid and they pushed her off the edge meant, like, you are becoming one of the people that can use the magic, not just a situation where when you become an adult as a woman in that town or whatever village, you get the braid. That's how it is in the books, right?
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you said that because Dave actually said that. I don't even know if you remember this, but you were confused a little bit about the braid too after we were just like walking around the house talking. And that's exactly what it is. It has nothing to do with the magic or the Aes Sedai. It's about becoming a woman. And let's also clarify real quick on the title. What's happening in the beginning is Nynaeve, who is one of our other main characters that we haven't gotten to talk about yet, is she's the one who pushes Egwene off the cliff and to test her to becoming a real woman and all that. So Nynaeve's role in the village is it's called a wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And from my understanding, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, the wisdom is like a semi-similar title to Maester.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we find out, I think, I don't honestly remember it's in the book or the show, but Nynaeve wanted Egwene to become the next wisdom, like an apprentice. And that's why they have such a close relationship. And when shit's hitting the fan, they're together. They're like, she cares for Egwene and all that. And just the idea that Nynaeve wanted to train her in that way. Like they just have like a close connection. Keep that in mind. But yeah, that's just what was going on there. It wasn't anything to do with the magic. Like these guys are so secluded from any of this bigger picture magic before Moraine comes to the village that they know nothing about that.
Yeah, and that's the riff between Rand and Egwene, is she more openly, as far as I know now, because I'm only six chapters into the book, but she pretty much straight up tells him, you know, I'm thinking of being the apprentice, and he says out loud, that means you're going to have a lonely life and pretty much means you're not going to be with me. And that's where the riff comes later, where she's like, you're being selfish, we have a journey, and all you care about is this shit, you know? So I thought that was a really strong part for her to have when she actually stands up to him and fights back, because he was being an ass at that point.
Yeah, I kind of sided with Rand a little bit because he was just pissed at her because she made her decision.
Well, no, I'm not pissed at him for being upset. But the scene in, I believe it's episode two, where they're like in the cave and they're hiding and he's kind of just being like a 12-year-old being a dick to her and ignoring her and stuff while they know that they're kind of stuck together still. And they have this journey that they need to take. And he's like, oh, well, you know, if you want to fucking go with, you know, do your thing with Nynaeve, then just go do it, bro. And she's like, stop being a little baby. Like, I was on her side for that.
I think those kind of moments hit a little bit better in the book, too, because they are younger. and they're a little bit more naive and like adolescents, and they also don't bang or anything like that.
So
it's like the early stages of flirting in middle school or high school. So it makes more sense. But but they kept the formatting the same, even though they aged them up. So I see where they're coming from, but I also can see the complaint about not loving that.
I also will say that they live in this very small, secluded town, and it's basically been agreed upon that these two are going to get married. They've been pretty much not betrothed to each other, but it's been kind of like a foregone conclusion. They do have that nice scene where Tam is telling Rand how he used to pick all of the berries and give them to Egwene when they were younger. And then he pulls the slick move where he pulls the berry out of his pocket when they're doing the dishes. And then my man gets some ass like a bus.
Yeah.
But I think you're supposed to think that Rand's a little petulant in that scene.
Yeah.
So that's, I just think that they've done a good job of characterizing their relationship and how they're kind of slowly, even at this point in this, I mean, we're fucking only three episodes in, but they're slowly going on their own journeys and becoming a little bit of individuals.
Yeah.
Which their entire lives so far have been growing up so close together.
I mean, you only got three choices of who you're going to bang in the village back in the
day. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it doesn't make me not like him any less or anything like that. It's just, it's an obvious flaw that anyone could have in a time of feeling, you know, upset or, betrayed, kind of, you know.
I do also think that that's one of the strongest points of Wheel of Time, is that all of these characters are so flawed. They all have such realistic downsides to them, and these things that you read them do, and it's like, motherfucker, like, why are you doing that? And then you realize this is actually fucking realistic. These guys are not that old. Like, they're getting thrust into this world that they have no idea what the fuck's going on. So they constantly make these kind of mistakes. And I feel like it just makes them feel a lot more human, and it's much easier to relate to them.
Now, let's talk really quick about Lan, man. We haven't talked about him, really. Yeah, I was going to say.
Him more than Perrin? He's
out of everyone, I mean, yes, definitely. He was just, I love those badass strong characters. And I know obviously Moraine is the most strong person in the world that we've seen so far, but just having that side badass character, I love that.
Oh yeah.
You can safely explain at least the warder Aes Sedai relationship. Did they explicitly show it in the show when she gets hurt? He does, I think.
Yeah, they say it in episode 3, I believe.
They mention it. They don't show it because Lan is a fucking beast.
Yeah.
Nynaeve turns to him and says, you know,
this is going to hurt.
The water bond makes you feel what she can feel. Like, this is going to hurt. And she fucking pops that pus bubble.
Yeah.
He just doesn't move, doesn't make a facial expression, because he's the fucking boss.
The other thing I love about him is that we saw Moraine fuck up a shitload of Trollocs with her magic, but he's just out there with a fucking sword. That's it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Love
that. And the best part about it is because they're so bonded and connected, and they have such a long history together of being these tight, you know, two going on this journey to fulfill the prophecy and look for the dragon reborn and all this. When they do the fight scene at the end and she's just doing the magic, she's just kind of like moving her head out of the way and he's coming from behind her and swinging the sword.
Like,
how connected they are is just everything I imagined in the book, just and more. Like, it was just so good to see it, because we're in the age of TV right now, like the golden age of TV, and we're seeing the cinematography, the freaking like how detailed the swords themselves are. Like,
right.
Just everything about it is so cool. And I'm all in on anytime lands on the screen, because he's just such a badass.
So, Kyle and Luke, let me ask you this question. Do you think they'll bring it into play in the show? The fact that in the books, they talk about how he's pretty much like camouflaged all the time with his robes.
I just think that they'll never bring up that they're camouflaged robes, because it's not practical to do it in the TV show. The money is better used in other places. But just for a little bit of context, in the books, warders have cloaks that basically, they're called color shifting cloaks. It almost looks like you're seeing through them when they wear them. They reflect light kind of in such a way that they almost seem somewhat invisible. They mention a lot when they talk about it is that people feel like a little nauseous almost if you stare at them for too long, because it fucks with your vision so much that you start to feel whack. But it's just not, I would say, worth. Obviously, they have fucking oodles of cash. But
I have a feeling it'll just be one of those things where they're like, holy shit, where'd you come from, bro? Like,
yeah, and it's just not, I don't think it's one of the, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. Luke, I think it was you brought up the fact that, you know, we're talking about, well, like Kyle said it, I think, with Egwene, where we're talking about the fact that now that she's finding out she can use, it's called the One Power.
Yes.
Yeah. She may be able to use the one power, and we're already starting to see glimpses of it. And Moraine explains, you know, that she doesn't have to be a wisdom. She's using the one power. She's just using it in a certain way. So should we assume that at some point Nynaeve's going to be a freaking badass with the one power too? Or
Moraine does explain it to Gawain, how they have what it's called in the Two Rivers. They talk to it about, I don't know, remember exactly if it's speaking to the wind,
yes,
or listening to the wind, to the wind. And she tells her that that's not you guys just being weird. Like, that is you guys using the one power.
Right.
And you do find out that we even see a clip where Nynaeve is teaching her, Egwene, this is how to do it. So that's kind of like a subtle hint that Nynaeve can also do it. I don't think that's a spoiler to say that.
Cool. That's what I figured.
I really like that twist, though, to Nynaeve. How do you pronounce it?
Nynaeve. I say my audiobook says Nynaeve.
Nynaeve. Okay. I really like that twist, though, when you assume when she gets pulled off by the Trolloc that she's just fucking dead. And then I think it's the end of episode two when she's holding the knife to Moraine, right?
Yeah, to Lan.
To Lan.
Like, you're going to tell me where those fucking kids are right now. Like, that was just so, that was a great little twist.
Wasn't that episode three that she comes back?
It might have been even episode three.
So that's the end of episode two. The last scene is Lan drags Moraine out, puts her up against the rock, and then Nynaeve's there.
But
the start of episode three, we get the flashback to what.
Yes,
how Nynaeve,
yes.
From when she got drug away to how she got back to us.
The reason I brought it up was because Chase, who's not on the pod right now, said that, like, was talking when, in between the episodes and stuff, and even maybe even a little bit in the beginning of episode two, he thought Nynaeve was just dead.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean,
in absolutes, yeah.
I didn't know, really, because, I mean, spoiler alert, you know, we had the opportunity to talk to her via Amazon Prime during the press junket, and you assume she's top billed, so she's not going to be killed off like that. But if you're just watching the show blind, like especially Dave, I was almost thinking like, well, now we need a new wisdom and it's going to be Egwene, you know, and here's her chance. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And shout out to Nynaeve for sneaking up on Lan in the first place. Like, that already shows, for me at least, her power ranking, because I feel like Lan would not be the kind of guy to let someone sneak up from behind, lo and behold.
Good catch.
Yeah.
And he does not let that go. It's like, how the fuck did she do it?
Yeah. I love how she's like, if you're gonna ask, just ask. And he's like, and he asks, she's like, I didn't say I was gonna answer, bro.
Yeah, she is, dude. She is a great character. She is such a badass chick that obviously they go almost out of their way to show it
in
the first three episodes, but she is a boss.
And me too.
Even from episode one, they did a really good job, because when Lan and Moraine enter the Wine Spring Inn in episode one, and everyone's kind of like silent looking around, and Nynaeve is the one who stands up and puts her hand right to her little sword dagger and is like, aim yourself, stranger. Like, she doesn't fuck around.
She's
very protective. She knows her role as the wisdom. She is great. And she also, I mentioned earlier that Rand is kind of like that vocal opponent to Moraine in episode two, especially. But that's because Nynaeve isn't there. When Nynaeve comes back and Moraine is actually unconscious, but she is like, I don't fucking trust you motherfuckers. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm helping her out so that you guys can lead me to my kids, basically, so I can help them.
That's and another just point to add on to that is if Dave, if you didn't like pick up on this, and Jimmy, you might already know, she's like at least 5 years-ish older than the rest of the main cast.
Right.
And that's more important in the books, because like 16 to like 21 means like 21, you're probably going to die in 10 years because, you know, you get diarrhea, you're dead. Or whatever.
I was thinking about I was thinking about that, too, in regards to like the immaturity of them. Like, you know, the life expectancy at this point in time is like 50 years, maybe. Dude, like
in this time, it's like 30.
That's wild.
Yeah. I mean, it's also important, especially in the books, and I'm pretty sure they are talking about in the show, that she is looked down upon because they just assume that she's not the wisdom because she's so young. You know, she doesn't get the respect because she's young.
She's definitely still like relatively young, but she's older than the rest.
Right.
Of them.
Right.
Yeah. And how about her? I mean, she kills a Trolloc solo dolo. What do you think about that? That was crazy.
That scene was awesome.
Talking
she was
about
one of the only few that like soloed one of them. Perrin and his girlfriend kind of did.
Yeah.
But still, like, that's an impressive feat for the most part.
Definitely. I mean, it gives all of our homies props, because every single one of them had the bravery to go up against them. I mean, most of them started fighting. Matt's the only one who kind of ran away, but then he ran towards his sisters to save them. So it really does show the bravery, because a lot of people were running and screaming, especially not even Egwene at the time when it was going to happen, when the Trollocs came running in, it was like, what do you got to fight them with? And they were like, fuck it, we're fighting. You know, we're in here. I thought they made them all badasses.
Just really quickly, I want to just shout out two characters that I also really liked. Tom the Glee Man, just because there's an aura about him to me that makes him seem like he's obvious. Like you've said, like characters, if you get introduced to their name, are probably going to come back. So I think he's going to come back. But there was like an interesting aura to him that I feel like I'm peaked to the point where it's like, okay, what's this man's deal? Mm-hmm. And so I really like Tom as a character. And then the white cloak guy, who is the slayer of Aes Sedai people in the South, at least.
Yeah,
he had seven of the eight
rings. Oh, he's going to be an ass, dude.
So I can already tell I'm not going to like him that much, but I can already tell he's a little bit of a badass in the same sense. So
that's,
I'm interested.
That's an interesting two characters right there, because Tom Maryland.
I love his name too. Yeah. It's such he a gets,
Tom
name.
Maryland. Yeah, what a great name.
He gets introduced and he's kind of a trickster. He does help them out. So you think he's a good guy. And then we get the white cloak, who is from the get-go, you kind of are introduced to him as a villain.
You
can tell that that's kind of the white cloaks are this other faction that we don't really know anything about them. We know that they're against the Aes Sedai, but also do we know if we trust the Aes Sedai? I don't know if we trust them yet. So it's kind of who's right here. That is a very interesting dynamic.
That is very interesting, because the Aes Sedai, I was expecting to just be assumed that they're the good guys, but throughout the first three episodes, they have the dark, and the book, what I've read so far, there's the dark tone to them, and everyone assumes that they're untrustworthy or they broke the world pretty much.
It just reminds me of The Witcher again, like how witchers are, at least maybe not generally, are very good people, but Geralt is a good guy and he gets shit on all the time wherever he goes for being a witcher. I have that same feel with the Aes Sedai right now.
So I was pointing it out when we were watching it, because I just love world building when it's done really well. And I love the idea of factions, right? Definitely think that, from what I understand, the Children of the Light, like these white cloak people, are see themselves as like the guardians of the world, and the Aes Sedai are
protectors.
What would you say, that they're evil? Like they think that they're evil?
Oh yeah. The white cloaks think that Aes Sedai are like evil witches, servants of the dark. Can't be trusted, need to eliminate them.
So the white cloaks still are anti-dark friends, though.
Yeah, the white cloaks have a weird kind of allegiance to just themselves, basically, where they think that everyone who isn't them
should bow. It's basically like the what's the name of the faction, the sparrows in Game of Thrones. It's like, even though like Cersei was like enabling them and stuff, they still say like, everyone's underneath us. You listen to us or you're in the wrong.
They're like a prototypical, just kind of religious zealot, militant force.
Right.
That has, obviously, you can tell they have a little bit of clout on the continent, but just
got some nice ass uniforms, dude. Keep that shit clean.
Get back to Tom Maryland very quickly. And just curious, Jimmy, what you had thought about him in his appearance in the show.
Because I've read some of the book. Yeah, so that was, I actually for a second was confused when you guys brought him up, because I didn't have his name memorized from the show, and I was putting him in perspective in my head from the book, because in the book he shows up pretty early on in
the
village.
The beginning.
Yeah.
He's there for the attack of the Trollocs in the beginning.
So
which is why I was like, did they fucking cut my boy?
Yeah. I'm telling you right now, from what I've seen so far of him, and I'm not even going to think about the village stuff, because I mean the book stuff, because in the village, you know, he's a cool guy, he's cool, he's messing with them, he's juggling, he's a little bit of a badass, but he doesn't do anything yet in my eyes. So seeing him in the show, I can feel like I might think he's one of my favorite characters based on what I've seen already, like straight up.
I'm in the same boat, Jimmy.
And he does have, if I'm not mistaken, our first and only, I think, human on human kill in the first three episodes.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, every other death happens to a shadow spawn. It happens to a Trolloc, essentially.
Right.
And Tom is the only person that kills a person.
Second, technically Perrin.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Accidentally, though. Totally accidental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, this is a good Carnival Row throwback for Kyle and Jimmy. What I pictured before I even
looks like him. Yeah.
Dude, I thought it was... So when I'm reading the book and stuff and I picture Tom Maryland, I picture a little bit older than the character and a little bit more white. And he always says he's got like he blows out his mustache and stuff. So I thought he was more like the guy that teaches. I forget his name, that teaches Jonas.
Yep.
The little dudes. Yeah.
Yep.
I literally
the little dudes
in my head as Tom Maryland. Do you know?
100%. And like he kind of looks like him. from Carnival Row.
He's got the little imps. He's the one. Little dudes. His Jonas. And
Yeah.
He's kind of. Yeah. I thought he was.
Laura Layla.
Yeah.
He had some really cool parts in just a little bit of time where he's interacting with Ran and Matt. And you could see that he's a trickster. He has the quick hands. He steals the coin, but you can also tell he's a really good guy based on the scene with Matt and the dead body. And he explains who that person is.
He also steps into a bit of a role that Moraine not purposely vacates, and where Moraine and Lan are these two people that come in and know basically everything about the world and are Evansfield Five, don't know shit once they leave the village. And now Tom is kind of has Matt and Rand, and now they can kind of see him almost as a mentor, or at least at the very least a guide to what the fuck is going on, because they don't know where they are. They don't know what happens if they go west, if they go east. So he is definitely a good person for them at the end of episode 3 to tag along with.
Speaking of, really quickly, that episode 3 ending was wild. We got introduced to this guy who just claims to be the Dragon Reborn, and I'm just sitting here like, I have to wait a month and a half for this. Come on. Like, I just wanted to pitch that in just because I really enjoyed that season 3.
It's true, man. It was a banger.
We haven't really mentioned the idea of the dragon and stuff, and like who it actually is and what they're leading you to believe and what you guys think. But I think we're going to save most of that talk for the actual deep dive. But just
Rand.
It's just such a cool concept of the idea of just, you know, the Wheel of Time starts to become not literal, but like, kind of literal. Like, it's a wheel that you're it's reincarnation of this essence of a person who's going to be chosen to fight the evil shadow, who's also, you know, going through these reincarnations. And I just can't wait to see how they if they're going to make it obvious, if they're going to try and play the mystery game for new fans and stuff like that. But whatever they end up doing, I'm buying into it. And just the idea of whoever's going to be going face to face with the Dark One, because there was one moment where you see Rand having a dream I think it's the first flash of the Dark One, like with the fire in his eyes and stuff. And then right there out loud, I think it was like Chase is like, oh, so like, obviously it's him. And then like a second later,
they Rand all saw
wakes
it.
Up. Yeah. And they're all like, well, I dreamt it too. And then Chase is like, okay, well that died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also they have Perrin has a dream as well. And Perrin wakes up in the bed and he's walking down the hallway and he like flashes between him and the Dark One.
Yep.
And then he flashes back to Perrin and he walks out. So they're all kind of having these dreams. Yeah. Dude, you know what I mean?
Moraine's like, if you see him again, you let me know.
Tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
That scene was actually like scary. Like I felt like for a second I was watching like The Haunting of Hill House right there when he was
Perrin's
going
dream?
Yeah, Perrin's dream. Oh, yeah,
dude, we were facing some hardship over here at our house. That was right when the video started buffering and we had to like pause for 15 minutes because it couldn't get to load and we were freaking out.
I'm literally screaming at Luke, I'm like, get this thing to fucking work, because I know something huge is about to just happen. And I'm like, if I'm watching that episode by myself, I'm definitely shitting a brick a little bit. I'm just terrified.
It was scary. It was loud and he was like ferocious. He looks like he's going to be great.
And Luke, you're talking about the literal Wheel of Time. I'm sure we're going to get into this more during the deep dive. But for the two of you, were you expecting to see the prologue for the book one on screen, the first chapter?
I honestly, until this exact moment, didn't remember that they forgot the prologue, because the prologue is so important. But how I see it is they'll probably just do it in either a vision or a cold opening at some point, maybe even in the finale episode, or they could end the season with it. But that part, I don't even know much about it, but I know it's going to be incredibly freaking important.
But yeah, like you're saying, it's the reincarnation. And at the end of the prologue, he says, you're not going to get away so easily. I'll see you again. You know?
Yeah.
We can kind of trampoline off the discussion of the dreams and the Dark One with, we do get introduced to there's a lot of different names for a lot of this stuff. So Shadow Spawn is kind of a general term for every kind of being that serves the Dark One. So
include humans?
No. The short answer is no.
Comparable to like an orc in Lord of the Rings, like kind of that.
Call it in the show the Eyeless. It's also a Fade or a Half-Man. Like, they're all the same name for that kind of creature. And then there's the Trollocs, who are just like the foot soldiers that you saw all over the episode. And they're Shadow Spawn.
We've been introduced so far in these three episodes to two forms of Shadow Spawn. So we've seen the Trollocs. which are kind of those half human-ish, half like
dog,
like,
wolf,
goat, everything, yeah. fucking yeah. thing under the planet.
Scary as fuck.
And then we have the Lord Voldemort looking motherfucker who goes by, they call him both a Fade and an Eyeless. So that's a common theme throughout a lot of the show, is that things have a lot of different names. A lot of different cultures refer to different things and myths like this in different ways. But for the most part, they'll talk about them as Fades and Eyeless. Eyeless is fairly obvious because they have no eyes. So Fades kind of are a little bit a rung above the Trollocs themselves. You can kind of tell throughout the episodes that he is a little bit of the leader. They part for him as he kind of walks over the bridge, things yep. like that. But we've also been exposed to in episode 3, once we meet Maya and
yes.
learn more about her. And then eventually she gets a dagger through the throat from Tom.
Not expecting her turn.
That there's also humans that are on the side of the Dark One. So yeah. those are called Dark Friends. So we have Shadow Spawn are kind of the creatures, and then Dark Friends are humans that are kind of sleeper cell agents of the Dark. I thought it was a good idea for them to expose us to that mm-hmm. at the end of episode 3, or at least in these first 3 episodes, to kind of now get us cook into the idea of, well, is this motherfucker a Dark Friend? Is this a person a Dark Friend?
Yeah.
Exactly, Jimmy. What you just said is the whole point. The fact that you just said not expecting her
yeah.
to. Every single person in the world could potentially be a Dark Friend.
Right.
And I'll the human side of that. Like that it's just littered throughout this world. And so that's why you can never feel safe. You don't know what character is going to turn on you, what character it means well. Some characters might be children, you know, they might follow the White Cloaks and the Children of the Light and stuff and not even fuck with the Dark Friends. But if they find out you're with Aes Sedai, they turn you.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much going on here. Just don't trust anybody is my advice.
Yeah. And I will say, I want some answers. I can't wait, because obviously I just said I wasn't expecting the heel turn from Maya. But at the same time, I was like, oh, shit. When she was like talking to Rand and she was like, oh, I should have put the braid in. You like that better. And it's like she has information about him.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. That ending to episode 3, I literally looked at Luke and I was like, why do we have to wait 2 months for this?
That was my main hesitation of watching the episodes, was that I looked at the calendar and was like, do I have the strength to last yeah. 5 weeks now until the newest episode?
You've lasted years waiting for it.
That's true, but now I had a little bit of a taste.
Yeah, you got that taste.
That'll probably wrap up our instant reaction.
We did not expect it to be this long.
Yeah,
if that doesn't show how much we love this already, like, come on.
Well, it was yeah. it's a tough balance between getting like really excited and diving into things and just kind of giving some surface level stuff. But we kind of just kind of rolled through all the characters, a little bit of some big events, but we'll dive more into a lot of that in the next episode that comes out. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for bearing with us through kind of one of the first times you've ever really done an episode like this, especially with a combination of subject matter experts and newbies on an instant reaction. So this was honestly really fun for me. I hope it was fun for you guys. That will end this episode. So once again, we are Bingetown TV. You can catch us at Bingetown TV on Twitter and Instagram. We have a website, surprise, surprise, BingetownTV.com. We also have a Patreon. If you can just search Bingetown TV on Patreon. If you want to get access to some exclusive content, some interviews that we do, a lot of video stuff that we've done as well. We cover an unbelievable amount of shows at this point. I mean, shit, by the time this episode comes out, we'll probably have about 165 podcast episodes dropped. So mostly sci-fi, fantasy shows. If you want to see something from us, hit us up on one of those socials. That's all I got. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
The Wheel of Time turns.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.